access number 11729, real one.
Mr. Patience, real one, could you tell me first of all where you were born?
I was born in a little fishing village in the north of Scotland.
Called?
Avoch, A-V-O-C-H.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a fisherman.
And where did you go to school in Avoch?
The little local public school, the Avoch Public School.
Is that a state school or a private school?
No, it was just a state school as it was then in Scotland.
How old were you when you left school?
13.
Did you go into fishing?
Yes, right away.
With your father?
Yes.
How did you come to be in the Navy then?
Well, I served about 3 or 4 years in my father's fishing boat, and then I left and went in the merchant service.
What made you do that?
Well, I was the youngest of 7 boys, and I could see no future in the fishing at that time, so I decided to join the merchant service as a deep sea man.
Which line did you work for?
The New Zealand Shipping Company. And the Furnace-Withy line and the Royal Mail line prior to me getting called up in August 1939.
How long were you in the merchant service before you were called up?
About 2 years.
And where did you do your trips to in that time?
Australia, New Zealand, up the Black Sea, all around the Mediterranean, and then I was running down to, I did one voyage down to South America, Brazil, Rio de Janeiro.
What were the names of the ships that you were on?
I was on the Huntingdon, which was torpedoed in 1941, and I was on the Opawa, New Zealand Shipping Company, and I was on the Aviemore, Furnace-Withy line, which traded up around the Black Sea, up the River Danube, and then I was on the Highland Chieftain, which ran down to South America, the River Plate.
What was life like in the merchant service before the war?
Well, very good. A luxury compared to the fishing. But conditions, looking back in retrospect, were not all that good.
What was the problem?
The living quarters were not very good. That was the main thing.
Cramped?
Not so much cramped as the lack of any blankets or good beds. You got what they called a donkey's breakfast for your mattress, which was a packed cloth full of straw.
So you are in discomfort when you're in bed at night?
Well, it wasn't very comfortable, let's put it that way.
What was the food like before the war?
Well, not too bad, I must say that. Not too bad.
And how did the officers and the men on the ships get on with each other?
Very good on the whole. I found them very good. All the officers in the New Zealand Shipping Company and in all the ships I was on. You knew your place. There was an officer. You was a seaman. So you paid them that little bit of respect, and that was it. I think it's the same thing goes for in every walk of life, really. If you, the person in charge is always treated with that much respect, and that's the way I've always done it.
What about the wages? Were you able to save anything out of the wages?
Well, I never. I like to go ashore all over the world, Wellington, Auckland. Don't matter where I was, I went ashore, and at the end of a 6-month voyage, I paid off with about £20, which was quite a lot of money in them days. £9.12 a month, an able seaman earned. And so over a 6 period, you went to all the different places, and as I say, you had to go ashore or stay aboard if you didn't like going. A married man stayed aboard, but being a single fellow, I went ashore and saw the lives, the different way people live in different towns and all over the world. So, and coming back, I came back to London and sort of more or less made my home here.
What happened to you on the outbreak of war?
The outbreak of war, I was called up before the war started. I was taken from the Royal Mail Liner, the Highland Chieftain, and I was sent down to Chatham Barracks. And thenceforth I was drafted aboard a British battleship at Portland.
Was that the Resolution?
The Resolution, yeah.
How did you react when you were called up?
Well, just took it as a matter of fact sort of thing. That's what I joined the reserve for, and this was it. This was the call, and I went to it. There was no qualms about it, you know.
You'd volunteered to go on the reserve?
Oh, well, I'd been in the reserve. I joined the Naval Reserve in 1938. I joined the Royal Naval Reserve, did my training at Portsmouth, went through the gunnery school, etc., served on board the Iron Duke. That was a seagoing period, but the basic thing was gunnery training at Whale Island. And of course then, having gone through that training, you were accepted as a trained man, expected to do any kind of job on any type of warship.
What was the Resolution like to serve on?
Terrible.
Why?
During wartime, they still insisted on a peacetime discipline, which I think was very bad.
Can you give some examples?
Well, cleaning brightwork during bombing in Norway, and the ship actually got hit by a bomb, and a lot of other things. You wasn't allowed on the upper deck after 4 o'clock unless you was dressed in without a collar. Lot of petty infringements.
Do you think he was hit by the bomb because of the brightwork?
Oh no. Well, some people said that, the reflection, but I wouldn't go as far as to say that. I think it was just a little bit on the commander's part that he wanted his brightwork cleaned, and he had it cleaned.
Did the crew resent this bull, as they call it in the army?
Majority of them did, but they couldn't voice an opinion.
Did you call it bull like they call it in the
yes,
army?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Did you find it very much different from being in the Merchant Navy then?
Oh, totally different. Altogether, totally different. Food-wise, you couldn't complain about anything. And people complained, but they didn't voice their opinion, because if they did, they were put on a charge, like I was myself. Complained about potatoes. And right away, the petty officer in charge come round asking about any complaints. He said to me, right, put your cap on and get up on the quarterdeck. And that was done because it was classified as a frivolous complaint.
What was wrong with the potatoes?
There wasn't enough of them. Plus the fact that they was all burnt. And I was consequently put on a charge, and I got 7 days extra work.
Did you complain again?
Oh no. Did the punishment and accepted it, and that was it. And forever hold your peace.
Was anybody else punished about the potatoes at the same time?
Not at that same time. I was unfortunately the one who complained in our particular, the whole mess deck that was which constituted about four big messes on a battleship in that one particular area, a quarter deckman's mess deck. And when the potatoes come down, they all said, oh, they was all burnt. And when the duty petty officer came round, he said, any complaints? And I said, yeah, the spuds are all burnt. And he looked round, nobody else complaining. He said, right, put your cap on. And that was it.
Was that the only time you were put on a charge?
Yes.
What did your shipmates say about your punishment?
Nothing really. It was accepted as one of them things, you know, that go.
But did they sympathise with you?
No.
Just thought that you shouldn't have said anything?
Well, whatever they thought, they never said it. They kept it to themselves, you know. And it was, I think, it was a general thing in the Navy, because there's a lot of whispering goes on, and, you know, things that might have stopped some of their promotions, etc., and all things like that.
So, was Norway the first time you were in action?
Yes. Well, we'd done Atlantic convoys, but took all the gold from the country on the Revenge and the Resolution, the Ramillies, to America or to Canada. And then when we came back from that, we'd done two big troop convoys back, the first troop convoys, the Canadian troop convoys. And then we went to Plymouth and had a sort of a bit of a refit, and then we went to Narvik.
So you hadn't met the enemy in the Atlantic before Norway?
No.
Can you tell me about the Norway campaign as you personally remember it on the Resolution?
Well, we were there after the initial assault in Norway with the destroyers, you know, the when they first went in, Warburton Lee, and we followed them in afterwards. And of course it was just a matter of we were being incessantly bombed there, and we'd practically we'd run out of anti-aircraft ammunition in Norway, and there was a lot of goings on up and down the fjords by different destroyers and cruisers, and the bombing was terrible, really. I never thought we'd get out of there. And we moved out of Rombaksfjord, I think it was, Narvik, and then moved up to Andalusness, and then eventually they evacuated Norway.
Did you shell the coastline?
Yes, we did. We shelled. There was a big, I think it was a railway station in Narvik, where they said there was a lot of German troops concentrated on. We landed some French Foreign Legion there, and I think the Germans killed the most of them, actually. But there was this supposed to be a concentration of German troops, and we shelled this tunnel, which was supposed to be up near a railway station at Narvik, you know.
What was your own action station?
I was, at that time, I was in the shell room of Y turret, which was right down the bottom.
What was your job?
Loading the shells onto the clips that went up through the shell room up far into the 15-inch gun chamber.
How did you like doing the job?
Not very good.
Why not?
Well, being locked down, three doors down, through the magazine, right down into the bottom of the ship, wasn't very nice. Nobody could say they would think they liked that job. I was originally allocated for the magazine crew, but they never had a pair of slippers big enough, because I took size 12 at the time, so I was demoted down to the shell room. Because the magazine crew, they all wore felt, you had to wear felt slippers because of causing any sparks, you know. Because as soon as you opened the door, you could smell the cordite fumes, you know, and any spark or anything would. That's how our ships got blown up, really, hence the Hood and all our battle cruisers at Jutland.
after Norway, what duties did the resolution take up?
Well, we left Norway and went to Skata, had a bit of repairs done to the bombing, which we got hit by a bomb and got repaired, and then we went to Force H at Gibraltar. Arrived at Gibraltar when Italy declared war, early June 1940.
And then soon after you took part in the bombardment of Oran.
That's right, yes.
What do you remember in detail about that?
Not a lot. I was there, in fact I was got promoted then, or not promoted, I got was taken out of the shell room crew and I was put on the anti-aircraft guns. We had four lots of anti-aircraft guns, 4-inch guns on the resolution, and I was a loading number on them. And they didn't take part in the bomb. We just sort of were more or less observers, like, you know, watched it. The 15-inch guns firing, there was the Hood, the Valiant, the Resolution firing into Oran, and the ships were coming out, and I think the big French ship that got away was the
Strasbourg.
And I can see the Hood now firing broadsides at her, doing about 28 knots, but it was terrible. Though a lot of people, well, I wasn't one of the ones landed, but some of the crew were landed at ordnance men were landed at Oran to dismantle any of the guns that was there, you know, but I never took part in that.
How did the crew feel about fighting the French Navy?
Well, we were all very, you know, sort of mixed feelings about it. We didn't really know what it was all about. As crew members, it was all done from up the top, you know, a lot of wheeling and dealing politically and admiral-wise. And I think they were undecided as to what to do, really, looking back in retrospect, you know. I mean, they made Admiral North a scapegoat, and Somerville the hero.
Do you remember the French fall of shots when they opened fire and
returned? No, no damage to us at all. There was hardly, you know, hardly any exchanges at all. Of course, they, later on, they got their own back on us at Dakar.
Did you? What happened after Oran?
Well, it was just doing. We had several skirmishes up in the Mediterranean, sighting the Italian fleet, you know, off the Balearic Islands, and but nothing came of it, you know. And it was just a routine sort of convoy work, backwards and forwards, and then of course they went. Then there was the Dakar escapade, you know, where we tried to lie General de Gaulle, and of course the Vichy subs was there. And they torpedoed us.
You were on the resolution at the time.
Yeah.
Can you describe it?
Well, I didn't know much about it. As I say again, the ship got torpedoed, and the lights all went out. Ship turned, listed over, and we thought she was going over like Royal Oak or at all kinds. You don't think of it at the time, you know. Look, and. Because all the dynamos went out, all the lights went out, and we didn't know the extent of the damage, but at the time I didn't know, but the damage control parties got down there and they kept the ship listed over, and we was told to withdraw from the action, and they got her into Freetown with a great big hole in her side. And then 600 of the crew, and I was one of them, we all got sent back to Chatham.
Do you remember any casualties?
I don't.
On the top of your
head? No, it was mostly stokers and other personnel. It was none of the people that we knew on the seamanship side that I knew.
Did you see the casualties?
No. No. It was all done in a sort of, as far as we were concerned, in a clandestine way. Get you out of the way, don't say nothing. And in fact, there was hardly anything mentioned about it. during the war. It was hardly ever mentioned.
Because of morale?
Well, this was it. You see, we had quite a lot of sinkings before that, the Royal Oak in particular, and then another big battleship they didn't want to. But I was amazed, really, that the ship got saved. And then later, patched up and taken over to Hoboken in New Jersey.
But you were sent to Chatham, you say?
Yes.
When did you go to Chatham?
About September.
1940.
1940, yeah. And what's I had a week's leave, and then I got... I mooched about Chatham for about a week or two, and then I got another draft to these American destroyers, or it was a job number, we didn't know what it was, but I was sent to Canada for these Leasland destroyers in October 1940.
Which destroyer did you join?
I joined the ex-USS Lincoln, named the Sherwood, HMS Sherwood, as she was then renamed.
Did these destroyers have a nickname?
What do you mean nickname?
These destroyers that were obtained from America on leased land, did they have any special nickname?
The four stackers, as I recall, I think it was.
Because they had four funnels.
Yeah.
What was
the? Tin cans. Was the they were virtually like tin cans to our destroyers. They were terrible, really. They rolled about and all kinds of things. But we were grateful at the film at the time because it's, you know, it was a bit of a show, you know. 50 destroyers. I never knew how they were. Well, I did about 10 days on the Sherwood, working up trials, consumption trials, compass trials, etc. I was quartermaster on there. And I was quite pleased with... the lot I had at the time, but they weren't very good destroyers, really.
What else was wrong with them, apart from the fact that they rolled about?
Well, they didn't seem to have any... there was no room in them, you know. They didn't seem to have any room.
And... did you prefer being on the Sherwood or the Resolution?
Oh, the Sherwood, definitely. Yeah, it was a new sort of thing, and as I say, I was only on there about a fortnight. But it was obvious by my job that I was a sort of away from the harsh discipline of the battleship, put it that way, and into a more sort of communal effort on a destroyer where everybody knew one another. And I fitted into the sort of the tempo that was on the ship, and then of course along came the transfer to the Jervis Bay.
When did that happen?
It happened on a Sunday afternoon. I knew about them, our merchant cruisers, and I knew three of my brothers or four of my brothers were on them. And I didn't know at the time, four of them were actually in Halifax in Nova Scotia. I had three on the Letitia and one on the Meloja, P&O liner. And of course, when this quartermaster on the Jervis Bay wanted to change places to get home and see his wife, I thought there was a chance for me to get on a merchant ship or similar type of ship, which I thought I would have been better used to, which I would have preferred, and that's why I transferred, really.
But she was HMS Jarvis Bay.
Oh yes, she was, yeah. But I mean, our merchant cruiser or not, it was my kind of ship, sort of thing. It's the kind of ship I'd have wanted to be on anyway. As I say, then again, more so away from the rigid discipline of the battleship type.
Do you know when you joined her?
On the Sunday night, I think it was the 28th of August. 28th of October.
1940.
Yeah.
And where was it that you joined her?
In Halifax, Nova Scotia. We joined her on a Sunday, sailed on a Monday, and got sunk the next Tuesday. 8 days. I think it was 8.5 days.
Can you describe the ship? Can you give a description of it?
Well, a typical merchant vessel, really, and one that, the kind of ship that I always wanted to be on, a big 15, 20,000 ton liner, thing that I always wanted to be, a quartermaster aboard a big liner. And at 21, I thought, this is it, this is the zenith, you know. And being our merchant cruiser didn't bother me at all. What you was going to meet or who you was going to meet never even come into it, you know. Little did I realise that we were going to fight a German pocket battleship.
What condition was the ship in when you joined her?
Well, I didn't have really a lot of time, but they seemed quite a happy crowd, you know, and very enthusiastic about getting into action. They'd asked me where I'd been, and I told them I'd been to Norway and one thing and another, and at Iran and got torpedoed, and oh, they thought that was good being in action, you see, and they were so keen, some, a lot of them, but a very friendly crowd, yeah, that, as I say, in a short period of time, that I knew them.
So most of the crew had never been in action?
No, they'd never been in action at all. They'd been on the ship since she was commissioned in 39.
What was the background of the crew?
Oh, varied, like myself, a lot of fishermen, and ex-fleet reservists, you know, chaps who'd done their time and come back, RFRs as they were called, a lot of RNRs, and a lot of young fellas, RNVRs, like my colleague who's still alive, Jack Barker. And, you know, that was the general. A lot of chaps come back from Civvy Street, some of them were postmen, some of them were different jobs, you know, sure, and they were called back, you know, for that mostly reservists aboard. All trained in the actual gunnery that was there, 6-inch guns, and the old 3.7s or whatever there was, and you know.
So, did you have any contact with the captain or officers in the short
time? Well, the short time, the captain spoke to me. When I first went up on the bridge, he spotted that I was a newcomer, you know, and he asked me what ships I'd been on and what I'd done, where I'd been. And oh, he was very observant like that. And but he was, you know, I always thought he was a very thoughtful man. He was always out, always seemed to be on the alert all the time, you know. Whether they had any 2 days before, or the day, or 2 days before, whether they had any warning, of course we were never told as ordinary crew members. We were never told or never brought into the confidence of anybody unless you heard what they called a little buzz or a whisper, what was going on, and or unless somebody in the work in the WT office dropped a little hint that something might be about. The crew, the lower deck ratings, were never told.
Do you think they should have been?
I think they should have been, because I think it would have, it would have brought out the element of surprise. It would have dispensed with the element of surprise, but I think it would have put people more on the alert than being caught unawares. I'm sure it would have done.